Welcome to the debate. I want you to imagine a cancer that doesn't grow as a discrete lump that you can just cut out.
Right. It's not like standard tumors.
Exactly. Instead, it spreads like a suffocating web wrapping around the lungs and the heart. That is pleural mesothelioma. And frankly, if you treat it like a standard lung cancer, you are starting a race you've already lost.
Yeah.
We're talking about a disease diagnosed in fewer than 3,000 Americans each year. It is an incredibly rare, deeply complex malignancy of the pleura, you know, the protective lining of the lungs. And because of its rarity, a general oncologist might see, I don't know, maybe one or two cases in their entire career.
And that lack of familiarity is exactly why standard community hospital protocols break down almost immediately. I mean, the diagnostic and treatment landscape for this disease is incredibly murky. Navigating it requires a totally different framework.
Which brings us to the core of our discussion today. When you look at the data and the survival outcomes, there is a very explicit, urgent recommendation. Patients absolutely must leave the generalist model behind and seek out high-volume mesothelioma specialists at dedicated programs.
Oh, absolutely. We definitely share that foundational premise.
Right. But our debate today centers on, well, why this shift to a specialty center is fundamentally transformative. I argue that the primary, indispensable value of a specialty center is its capacity for aggressive, highly complex clinical and surgical interventions.
Okay.
The sheer volume of cases they handle allows them to execute an interventional superiority that a generalist simply cannot match. I represent the position that the scalpel and the science drive the survival.
Well, I acknowledge the massive clinical gap between a generalist and a specialist, but I come at it from a different way. I represent the perspective that while surgical skill is undeniably critical, focusing solely on interventional superiority misses the broader architecture of survival.
How so?
Because the specialist's greatest impact actually comes from structural, multidisciplinary orchestration. It's the systemic integration of early palliative care and the generation of a really precise medical legal ecosystem. That is what truly alters the trajectory of the patient's life and their family's future.
Let's break down the mechanics of that interventional perspective first, because the difference here is not about bedside manner or, you know, having a nicer hospital wing.
Right.
It is a profound difference in clinical mathematics and biological understanding. Specialists at these dedicated programs are treating dozens, sometimes hundreds of these patients annually.
Which is huge.
It is. And that volume is what allows them to recognize and target the microscopic behavior of the disease. For instance, mesothelioma presents in different cell types. You have epithelioid, which is more brick-like and cellular, and sarcomatid, which is spindle-shaped and highly aggressive.
Yeah, and a generalist might just see the word mesothelioma on a chart.
Exactly. But a specialist knows how to match emerging immunotherapy combinations to those specific cell types, factoring in the exact stage and the patient's unique molecular profile. They know exactly whose body can survive the trauma of having their lung and diaphragm removed and who needs a targeted immunotherapy cocktail instead.
Sure, but
to put it in perspective, it's like comparing a general oncologist treating mesothelioma to a talented neighborhood mechanic trying to rebuild a Formula One engine, you know?
Right.
They might be great at what they do, but they simply lack the specific tools to manage complex immunotherapy protocols or to perform an extrapleural pneumonectomy, an EPP. The access to cutting-edge clinical trials and the sheer technical mastery required to perform these interventions, that is the direct mechanism that pushes back the mortality curve.
Okay, that biological precision is impressive, but treating the tumor isn't the same as treating the patient.
I mean, they're pretty closely linked.
They are, but the true standard of care at major cancer centers isn't just finding a better surgeon with a sharper scalpel or, you know, access to novel drugs. The fundamental unit of survival is the multidisciplinary team, the MDT.
Right, the whole team.
Exactly. Quality of life and overall survival are equally driven by systemic management. If we only look at the surgeon and the oncologist, we ignore the pulmonologist, we sideline the palliative care specialist, and crucially, we fail to generate the documentation that protects the patient's family from total financial ruin. I'd argue the ecosystem itself is the intervention.
But all that holistic care is a moot point if the primary tumor isn't removed or chemically destroyed. And that requires an incredibly specific type of physician. I think we need to look at the undeniable drivers of care here, the thoracic surgeon and the thoracic oncologist.
I'm not discounting them. I just...
Think of the lung lining like toxic wallpaper that has been superglued to drywall. A standard general surgeon might try to cut out a piece of the wall, but a mesothelioma specialist is performing a pleurectomy with decortication, a PD.
Right.
They are meticulously scraping off that diseased wallpaper cell by cell without puncturing the delicate drywall of the lung beneath it. Or, like I mentioned, in more advanced cases, they are performing an EPP, where they literally remove the entire lung, the lining, the diaphragm, and the pericardium around the heart.
It's an incredibly intense surgery.
It is. And a generalist simply lacks the tools, the repetition, and the proprietary knowledge to execute those procedures. Without these massive, highly specific chemical and surgical interventions, I mean, all this multidisciplinary orchestration you're talking about is basically just making the patient comfortable while the cancer wins.
Well, that is true in a textbook scenario where the patient arrives perfectly healthy and ready for surgery. But in practice, you're skipping the crucial steps that even make a patient a viable candidate for that incredibly traumatic procedure.
What do you mean?
Long before a thoracic surgeon ever scrubs in to scrape that wallpaper, the pulmonologist is doing the heavy lifting. They are the ones performing the thoracentesis to drain liters of pleural effusion. The fluid builds up around the lungs.
Right, so the patient can breathe.
Exactly. So they don't suffocate and can actually draw a breath. But more to the point, let's look at the integration of the palliative care specialist.
Ah, the symptom managers.
See, that framing is exactly what the modern data dismantles. People view palliative care as just a nice add-on, or worse, they confuse it with end-of-life hospice care.
Well, they do often overlap.
They do, but early integration of palliative care alongside active treatment doesn't just improve quality of life. Research consistently shows it actually helps patients live longer.
Wait, really? Just managing symptoms extends survival?
Yes. Let's look at the biological mechanism there. By proactively managing the severe breathlessness, the chronic fatigue, and the nerve pain, the patient isn't burning thousands of calories just trying to exist. They maintain their weight. They preserve their immune function. That physical and psychological resilience is the exact biological currency they need to survive the brutal toxicity of the chemotherapy or the massive physiological shock of the EPP surgery you just described.
I see.
If the patient's foundational physiology collapses because we ignore its symptom management in favor of aggressively chasing the tumor, your interventional superiority is entirely useless. The patient will die from the treatment before the cancer gets them.
Okay, establishing a hierarchy of curative intent does not mean dismissing the role of symptom management. I mean, managing breathlessness extends life precisely because it allows the patient to endure the actual life-saving intervention. The intervention is still the apex of the care model.
I guess it depends on how you define the apex.
Let's trace how a patient actually navigates into this highly complex system. Because the architecture of specialized care proves the primacy of clinical action. When you look at the pathways at NCI-designated cancer centers, they offer rapid telemedicine consultations, they bypass traditional referral networks, they accept self-referrals.
Right.
This entire infrastructure is engineered for one thing, absolute velocity.
I question the premise that velocity is the primary advantage here.
It has to be. Pleural mesothelioma is notoriously aggressive. The window for surgical candidacy can close in a matter of weeks. The goal of this specialized infrastructure is to get the patient's CT scans, their PET scans, and their pathology report in front of a thoracic oncologist immediately.
But speed without accuracy is...
You use telemedicine to eliminate geographic friction because every week wasted at a community hospital, you know, waiting for a generalist to consult a textbook, is a week the tumor is advancing. The structure of access exists solely to initiate active, tumor-directed treatment as quickly as biologically possible.
That is a compelling argument. If you assume the initial diagnosis from the community hospital is correct.
Well,
but the reality is that accessing a specialist isn't primarily about speed. It's about correcting a fundamentally flawed foundation. You're arguing that we need to rush the patient onto the operating table or into an infusion chair. But second opinions at these specialty centers frequently result in revised diagnoses, completely different staging assessments, and changed treatment recommendations.
Well, yeah, because the diagnostic imaging at the community level isn't sophisticated enough to map the disease.
It goes deeper than the imaging, though. Pleuromesothelioma routinely mimics adenocarcinoma, which is a much more common type of lung cancer, or even benign pleural diseases. Under a microscope, they can look nearly identical to an untrained eye.
Wow. Really?
Yes. If your priority is purely speed, you risk fast-tracking a patient into an aggressive treatment protocol for the completely wrong disease. Or you might be operating on a patient whose cancer is actually stage 4 when the community hospital thought it was stage 2.
That would be a disaster.
Exactly. The value of the specialist network isn't velocity, it's accuracy. It is taking the time to completely reset the diagnostic baseline. Even if a patient already has a treatment plan from their local doctor, the specialty center hits the brakes. They bring in their own specialized pathologist to reevaluate the tissue stains and ensure they aren't treating a phantom disease. You simply cannot fast track a flawed baseline.
Okay, I hear that, but I'm not convinced by that line of reasoning, because resetting the baseline is precisely what enables the aggressive clinical action.
How so?
The accuracy you're talking about, getting the precise cell type, distinguishing between epithelioid and sarcomatoid cells, it's a clinical tool. It dictates the biology of the treatment. The thoracic oncologist needs that exact staging to navigate the specific systemic therapy.
Right.
And the radiation oncologist relies on that highly precise diagnostic mapping to administer adjuvant treatments. Take intensity-modulated radiation therapy, or IMRT.
Oh, yeah. IMRT is fascinating.
It really is. It isn't just standard radiation. It's like using a 3D printer of radiation beams that sculpts the dose perfectly to the shape of the chest cavity. It avoids scorching the heart while obliterating the microscopic cancer cells left behind after surgery. Without that hyper-accurate baseline, that interventional precision is impossible. The staging serves the clinical execution.
It dictates the clinical execution, certainly. But it also dictates the legal and economic survival of the patient and their family.
Wait, what?
Yeah, and this is where the holistic medical-legal ecosystem of the specialty center truly separates itself from standard oncology. The documentation generated by this exact staging process has a dual purpose that extends far beyond the operating room.
I see why you think that, but let me give you a different perspective. Bringing attorneys, trust fund claims, and legal strategy into the clinical environment seems like a profound distraction.
It sounds like it would be, yes.
I mean, when a patient is facing a disease with a median survival time measured in months, dividing the focus of the medical team between destroying a tumor and acting as paralegals to quantify economic damages feels completely counterproductive. The immediate biological threat of the cancer should be the only thing that matters in that exam room.
I think our listeners might be scratching their heads right now.
I know I am.
Why are we talking about defense attorneys, trust funds, and economic damages in the middle of a medical debate about oncology? It sounds entirely counterintuitive.
It really does.
But that is what makes mesothelioma entirely unique in the landscape of cancer care. It is almost exclusively an occupational and environmental disease caused by exposure to asbestos. You cannot separate the medical from the legal, because the disease itself is evidence of an industrial trauma.
Okay, sure.
So the documentation produced by a pleural mesothelioma specialist is actually legally significant.
But how does a highly technical pathology report change a patient's outcome outside of telling the oncologist which chemotherapy combination to prescribe?
Because an expert pathology report from a recognized high-volume specialty center carries definitive weight in a court of law and in asbestos trust fund claims. It scientifically establishes the nexus between the asbestos exposure and the specific cancer.
Oh, I see.
Right. If a patient relies on a general oncologist's notes, those notes might be ambiguous. They might lack the specific immunohistochemical markers, and a corporate defense attorney can successfully challenge those ambiguous notes, arguing the cancer was caused by smoking or something else.
Wow.
That leaves a grieving family with hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical debt and zero compensation. A specialist's multidisciplinary documentation, on the other hand, is bulletproof. Furthermore, the exact stage and prognosis you need to sculpt the IMRT radiation, the legal team needs that exact same highly granular documentation to calculate pain, suffering, and future medical expenses. The detailed records of how many chemotherapy cycles a patient can endure are what quantify the economic damages.
So the argument is that the clinical precision must be weaponized to protect the family's financial reality.
Exactly. The specialty center is designed to treat the whole crisis, not just the cellular one. If a patient receives world-class interventional medical treatment but faces total financial devastation because their generalist didn't document the etiology of the disease properly, the medical system has failed them. Mesothelioma attorneys actively work with these leading specialists because the standard of care inherently includes protecting the patient's economic future. You cannot abstract the tumor from the human being's reality.
That is a very powerful articulation of the systemic burden these patients carry. But let's look at the causality there. I would argue that the definitive diagnosis, the bulletproof pathology report that holds up against corporate defense attorneys, only exists because the specialist has the clinical volume and the diagnostic technology to identify it in the first place.
Well, they go hand in hand.
But the legal protections are a downstream byproduct of the clinical superiority. If the thoracic surgeon doesn't have the interventional expertise to execute a proper VATH biopsy, you know, video-assisted thoracoscopic surgery, to safely extract the tissue, there is no sample to send to the pathologist.
That's true.
Which means there is no definitive diagnosis, which means there is no legal case. The origin point of all this holistic structural support is the interventional capability of the physician.
I would argue the origin point is the multidisciplinary philosophy of the center itself. I mean, a great surgeon operating in a vacuum without a pulmonologist to optimize lung function, without a palliative team to sustain the patient's physical endurance, and without the administrative rigor to document the occupational nexus is just performing an isolated mechanical task.
That's a little harsh on the surgeon.
Well, the true power of the specialty center is that it recognizes mesothelioma as a complex, multifaceted attack on the patient's body, their quality of life, and their family's future. It mounts a coordinated, simultaneous defense against all of those fronts.
We are clearly looking at two vital sides of the same paradigm, even though we weigh their critical value differently.
Definitely.
If we step back and summarize, my position remains that high-volume specialists provide the indispensable interventional edge. When dealing with a disease this rare, growing as a complex web throughout the chest cavity, the ability to execute demanding surgeries like pleurectomy with decortation, combined with the capability to match highly specific molecular profiles with targeted therapies, is the literal engine of survival.
Right.
The specialist's deep clinical familiarity with the disease is what fundamentally pushes back the mortality curve.
And my position is that while those clinical interventions are vital, the specialty center's true transformative power lies in its holistic ecosystem. Survival isn't just a surgical metric. Early palliative care extends life by preserving the patient's physiological resilience, keeping them strong enough to fight.
Yeah.
And the rigorous expert documentation generated by this multidisciplinary team is what secures the patient's legal and economic future, validating their occupational trauma and protecting their family from financial collapse.
Yet, despite our different framing of exactly how the value is generated, there is a profound point of convergence here. We both entirely agree that remaining with a generalist for a disease diagnosed less than 3,000 times a year is a critical misstep.
Absolutely.
The community hospital model simply cannot support either the interventional precision or the systemic orchestration required to manage pleural mesothelioma.
Without question, the status quo of standard oncology is completely insufficient for a disease of this complexity.
Which brings us back to where we started. When you step into that murky diagnostic landscape, you don't just need someone who can read a standard X-ray. You need a team that understands they aren't just treating a generic set of symptoms, they're navigating a biological and systemic crisis.
Perfectly said.
Navigating these complex medical frameworks requires us to look far beyond the tumor itself and consider the entirety of the patient's physical, structural, and economic reality. I highly suggest our listeners dive deeper into the varied perspectives and resources available to better understand exactly how to navigate these intricate medical pathways for themselves or their loved ones.
Because when the standard machinery of medicine breaks down, understanding the full architecture of your care is the only way forward.
Exactly. Thank you for joining us on The Debate.